meeting of the Board of Education of the Logan City School District in Cache County, Utah. Today is March 8th, 2022, and the time is 3:02 p.m. We are meeting in the boardroom of the district office as well as streaming live via the district Facebook page as usual. We are meeting here early this afternoon to avoid any members of our administration or the board who would like to attend the caucuses this evening. We did not want to compete with that, and we encourage those of you who would like to attend. I believe we're at the middle school for the most part in our area. My name is Frank Stewart. I'm the board vice president, and we'll conduct this meeting on behalf of board member President Williams, who is attending to some family issues this week. And we also need to use Ann Gary, who is home with some medical issues. So in attendance this evening are, besides myself, our board members Christy Cooley and Greg Miller. We have our superintendent, Frank Schofield, and business administrator, Jeff Harbin, and other administrators, which we appreciate very much being with us today. And also Rachel Beam, who does so much for us to prepare these meetings. It's the mission of the Logan City School District to ensure that all of our students leave our schools ready to create a positive future for themselves and for their community. And we pledge our efforts towards that. We'll begin with a Pledge of Allegiance. Superintendent, I believe you all are here to
lead us. Please stand. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll begin this evening with a celebration of sorts. It's been a month of district-wide wellness. Superintendent, if you could give us an update, and perhaps Rachel will participate as well.
Yes, thank you. So we'll put this up on the screen for those who aren't able to see. We have, over the last month, engaged in a number of activities at the district level to promote wellness among all of our employees. This has primarily been managed by Rachel Bem, my executive assistant, and Taylor Atwood, our district receptionist. But the goals have been to promote wellness for district employees in five different dimensions: community, so relationships, social, occupational, financial, and physical and mental. So we started putting together a list of different activities that we could use throughout the month to encourage wellness among all of our employees. We know that this is something that is always a need for our employees, but with the challenges of the pandemic, it's become increasingly important, and we really have seen that impact. Some of the things that we did was a weekly wellness bingo, and these were sent out to all employees through the district email, and they were encouraged through the bingo to do things that addressed each of these five areas of wellness. They might do a financial review, visit with a financial advisor, look at their retirement plan, review their budget, just anything that could be used to address their finances. Things that help them build relationships with others, either in their families or here in the workplace. Things that address their physical health, mental health, writing in a journal, playing a new game, find or free read something you find enjoyable, setting a new career goal and sharing it with someone, but really just trying to help our employees rely on one another and find new ways to strengthen their own wellness. Every time an employee turned the bingo in to the office, they were entered into a raffle. So we did weekly prize drawings for employees who participated with a number of different gift certificates to businesses around the valley. And the school at the end of the week that had the highest percentage of bingos based on the size of their staff wins a lunch paid for by the district. And this is the second year in a row where Mount Logan Middle School has won that. It was a really close run between Mount Logan and Wilson Elementary. But Mount Logan just barely pulled ahead at a little bit higher participation rate. The other part of this that we put together was something that Rachel did, and she put together a series of Did You Know campaigns. And these were flyers that went out to staff that talked about some of the resources and supports we currently have to support employee wellness in the district. For example, through our Motive Health insurance or health insurance program, we have free emotional and family counseling that all of our employees can access, both remotely, and they can schedule in-person visits and counseling sessions for that. And that's something that's already part of the health insurance that we provide, or services we provide through our health insurance. Tips on some of the resources that we have as we meet with financial advisors, URS retirement planners, etc., to try to get more information out. Generally, we get good participation. Our participation was significantly higher this year than it was last year. And we received one email from an employee who stated, you know, I didn't really do a whole lot with this last year, but I just want you all to know that this year I've been going through some additional challenges, and the information that I received during this month actually helped me with some changes I needed to make and with some supports I needed in my personal life. So I'm very grateful to Rachel and Taylor for the work they do to manage this and put these resources together. And it's been a fun thing to see how we can just put some basic supports out there and basic reminders of the full breadth of resources and support that we have to promote our employees' wellness, whether it's physical or emotional. So we just wanted to celebrate that with you all as a board so you would be aware of it. And if you have questions about any of the information that's gone out or anything you see in the Did You Knows, we'd be happy to get that to you as we move forward.
Any questions or feedback? Obviously, if we continue to build the numbers, that's the main target and objective, and it sounds like the gauntlet's been thrown down by the Mount Logan Middle School for this coming
year. It's serious.
So thank you, Superintendent, and Rachel. Please pass our appreciation on to Taylor as well.
Yep,
we appreciate that very much. We do have mention of a gentleman who would like to make public comment, but is not able to quite be here yet. So could I have a motion to move public comment to later in our agenda so that we could accommodate that?
I'll second that.
Greg Miller has moved that motion and been seconded by Christy Cooley. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. So we will move that to later in the agenda. Superintendent, does it matter in the action items if we were to take a break when that gentleman comes?
No, what should like?
Very good. Let's move on to the consent calendar. Has everybody had a chance to review the minutes, and do we have any corrections as far as any of you can tell? I did not see anything that looked out of sync with what we discussed before. Could I have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I will make a motion that we approve the consent calendar, which would include the minutes from board meeting dated February 22nd of 2022.
Thank you, Christy, and seconded.
Second.
By Greg Miller. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. We'll move straight into our action items. That'll give us a good chance to go straight to our we have four items that we'd like to address. The first one is sex education curriculum review and approval, and we asked our public comment arrived. So thank you for puffing and puffing to get here. We did make that amendment, and so we can at this point have public comment. We do want to remind, of course, for the general public as well. And Rachel, is this the only person that we've had in the game? Just before we proceed, the board desires to conduct its meetings in an orderly and efficient manner. Therefore, we certainly take spontaneous comment discussion from the audience. We don't encourage that, I'm sorry. We don't talk about personnel issues or asking of questions about complex or other items that pertain specifically to an individual. We typically allot about 3 minutes per person based on the numbers that we have. But, Mr. Mason, would you care to come and make public comment?
Yeah, do I need to stand? I don't know.
Yeah, right here at the microphone, just so
my voice is loud enough for recording.
Sorry, I'm still catching my breath from speeding to get here.
Thank you for coming this evening.
Yeah, so my biggest, because I think I submitted everything to everybody about that. So my biggest concern as a parent of multiple student athletes at Logan High School is the lack of facilities and the lack of, we're at a disadvantage from the very beginning when we started. We do not have the facilities. We don't even have hot water to our locker room. So when you look at, I've done some studies, and over the last 4 to 5 years, we've lost anywhere from 25 to 30 athletes to go to other schools. And I'm just trying to find out what the plan is and what we're doing about that. If you look at people, one, you know, we have open enrollment, and if you are a student athlete, why would you go to Logan? Green Canyon has the nice shiny things, Ridgeline has the nice shiny things. I'm just trying to find out kind of what we're doing. My son's a big football player, I have two others that are basketball, baseball, football, and I'm committed to Logan. I've been in education. I've tried to help in any way that I can. We have terrible facilities. We share our weight room, which is, I've done the math, and we have less than 1A facilities. We're the only, besides Skyview, which has their own little thing, nobody else shares a locker room or a weight room. I mean, it's just at that point where, you know, 2015 was the last state title, but other schools have passed us facility-wise. And so I'm just trying to find out what the plan is, because I don't want to be that guy that transfers my kids. And so I've talked to Daryl, I've talked to a lot of people, and I'm willing to help raise funds and raise money, but I want to know that that's going to go towards, I already know we have the Football Foundation, and that's only for football, but I just don't know what we're doing about catching up. So that's kind of my biggest thing. Because I've got two others that aren't in Logan schools right now. And I mean, my son got a football scholarship from Logan High School, so that's great. But I have a freshman, and I don't know what to do. So that's kind of my biggest things. And it's about pride. It's about school pride. It's about, I come from a very small town in California where we have 7,000 people at our football games. And basketball games are full, and there's only 7,000 people in our town. And so I know that when athletics are great, you get more tax revenue because people want to come to your area. We just don't have a continuity. So we have high turnover in coaches. We have a high turnover in teachers. And I'm a coach, but I'm here as a parent. And so I donate my time. I donate my money. I want to know that this is going to get better. That's a separate issue. Is open enrollment's done a detriment to athletics in general. But I hope that we have a plan. And that's my biggest concern, is if we don't have a plan, then it's just not going to get any better. I don't know how we won 6 football games. I mean, that's the honest to goodness truth. Our kids don't shower at the schools because we have no hot water. We share a weight room. So when we're trying to get better, we have the public that's in there at the same time. We lack racks, weight racks. We're at a detriment. We've surveyed everybody across the state, and we have very few advantages. And I'll just let that be that. So I just hope there's a plan.
So, thank you. If you're all right with this, I'll have Rachel, my assistant, reach out to you and set up a time where you can come and visit with Mr. Barber, our business administrator, and we can show you what we've been working on and what the plan moving forward is and kind
Absolutely.
Of the challenges. So she'll reach out to you and we'll set up a
time. Okay, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, can you tell me your name again?
Lloyd Mason.
Okay, perfect.
I don't know if I want that on the record.
Thank you, Lloyd.
Thank you, Lloyd. We appreciate it very much, and we're very much aware of your feedback and the reason for doing so. Let's move to our action items now. We'd like to invite Marcy Elliott to come forward, our director over special education, and give us an update on a very critical key issue.
Okay, wearing multiple hats tonight. So, all right, so this is an update on the human development and sex education policy in the district. Our district policy is ECH, and that is coming from R277 and 53G from the state code and school board rule. So subject to parental permission, a student shall receive sex education instruction on at least two occasions during the period between 8th and 12th grade. In our district, we're doing 7th grade health class. 8th grade, there's a focus on health relationships, and then the 10th grade health class. Board responsibility, this is from our policy. The Board of Education shall annually review the decision to adopt the sex education instructional materials used in the district and shall consider whether to continue use of these materials. We would say we want to keep doing what we're doing at this point. Sex education health guidelines. All health and sex education shall stress the importance of abstinence from all sexual activity before marriage and fidelity after marriage as methods of preventing sexually transmitted diseases. All health and sex education shall stress personal skills that encourage individual choice of abstinence and fidelity in marriage. The following may not be taught in district schools: the intricacies of intercourse, sexual stimulation, or erotic behavior, the advocacy of premarital or extramarital sexual activity, the advocacy or encouragement of the use of contraceptive methods or devices. In the first year of assignment, all newly hired or newly assigned staff who have responsibility for any aspect of sex education instruction in the district will attend a state-sponsored in-service outlining the sex education curriculum and the criteria for sex education instruction in any courses offered in the public education setting. All staff who have any responsibility for any aspect of sex education instruction in the district will attend district training outlining the sex education curriculum and the criteria for sex education instruction in any course offered in the public education system at least once every 3 years. The Sex Education Committee Materials Review Committee consists of parents, health professionals, school health educators, and administrators. And before any guest speaker or guest presenter may present any information in any course relating to sex education instruction, the speaker or guest presenter and the materials to be presented must have been approved by the district Sex Education Curriculum Material Review Committee. So our existing committee, Melissa Dahl, a parent, Katie Nielsen, a parent, Leslie Blazard, a parent, Larry Williams, board member, Kelly Hansen, the district nurse, Stacy Flagger, Logan High health educator, and Liz Dickinson will be the director of secondary schools going forward. The role of the committee.
It looks like that's weighted three parents and three administrators.
Yeah, the policy does say that we should have as many administrators as we have educators on there.
So it's, we do want it balanced. Like
yes.
That. I was just thinking you might want to weight it more for the parents.
Yeah, the policy says at least equal.
And I was wondering why we don't have representation from the middle school on there. Because two of those classes are taught at the middle school.
Okay, that is a good question. We look at that for next. The committee only meets every other year, and we're on an off year, so we haven't had to have a committee meeting this year.
Unless you have them want to have a guest presenter.
Right, or if there's a change in curriculum and we haven't, yeah.
Yeah, and Nikki has been reaching out to schools to see if we could add a couple of more individuals. She's reached out to both the high school and the middle school. To see if there were other parents who'd be interested in participating. So yes, that invitation has been put out as we have some more and they'll be included.
And maybe a middle school?
Yeah, that's one of the
The
invitation.
It seems like that would be logical since it's heavy on the middle school side.
The committee will make recommendations to the Board of Education regarding the sex education instructional materials to be used in the district. The Board of Education shall annually review the decision to adopt the sex education instructional materials used in the district and shall consider whether to continue use of these materials. The committee met last in December of 2021 to review district policy and make curricular recommendations. The committee only meets if there is a need to adopt new curricular materials, which there has not been. The curriculum utilized in the 10th grade Prentice Hall Help textbook, and those green as they're showing up on there are links to some USBE documents for 10th grade. 8th grade, the healthy relationships is in coordination with CAPSA, and in 7th grade, follows up on what's taught in the 5th grade maturation presentation, and there are a couple of links there to the things that are used for that. There's also a Google Drive folder that has some additional information as deemed necessary and desired within the bounds of the policy. Another piece from the policy, every 2 years the board shall review, the board's review shall include data for the county that the district is located in regarding teen pregnancy, child sex abuse, and sexually transmitted diseases and infections, and also shall include data on the number of pornography complaints or other instances reported within the district. So this is the data from last year. Live births per 1,000 students, females ages 15 to 19. So if you look overall in Utah, that number is coming down a little bit. Cache had an up, or you know, a sixth, then an eighth, then back down to a sixth. Logan has seen an increase across all 3 years.
Is that Cache County School District or Cache County?
It's Cache County.
The whole county.
Yes.
Which is up, we're up about 50% from 18.
Yeah, I don't know if 18 was an exceptionally low year, or that just sort of a good starting point when we got borders.
And still, you look, I mean, the numbers are still relatively low. We've got four. I mean, it's still a concern. I don't mean to say that, but it's, we've gone from almost five an average to eight. So that's three more babies. Still three that we are concerned about. But we also have the dynamic that some of our 19-year-olds are married moms that are almost 20.
I don't know what age they were. Were they 18 or 19 or were they 14
or 15? There has been that increase in the data. Okay, this chart is from some data that was provided by the health department. And Frank, if I'm misinterpreting any of this, jump in. And all right, so basically we're showing cases of chlamydia and gonorrhea. The columns that are headed in blue, the top one is students ages 15 to 19. The bottom is student for children ages 10 to 14. And then the columns over to the right are the overall numbers in the county over a four-year period. So if we look at the you know, the chlamydia, there aren't really any big jumps, you know, maybe in, so it also, it breaks out by zip code. So we've got, 84321 residents, the 341 residents, and then the total, not sure on that. Is that outlying whoever doesn't fit into one of those zip codes? Because the math doesn't add up for that to be a total. But the interesting, there was one piece. If you look at the 84341, the gonorrhea has a number of 3. But if you look at the number of students, so go over 2 columns to the left, Frank, and 1.5 of those, 1 more over. So there were 3 cases, and 1.5 of those were attributed to an individual ages 15 to 19. Okay. Other questions on that? Okay. There were 57 total sex offenses involving juveniles in 2021 reported in Logan during that the calendar year. The district received 0 complaints of student accessing pornography on the district network. 1 Logan High parent reported finding a nude picture on their student's computer. The picture had been sent to the student directly, and action was taken to restrict the student's access to only approved or whitelisted websites and apps. Students are flagged by our Go Guardian program for trying to run inappropriate searches for sexual content. These searches are blocked, flagged, and notices sent to administrators who can then follow up with the student and parents and determine if restrictions are necessary. We have 1 documented parent conversation in the elementary school, 5 documented conversations in the middle school and no documented conversations at the high school. Okay, questions?
Marcy, on the Go Guardian, does that go directly to the principal?
It's through IT.
Okay,
through
the IT.
IT are the ones that get the flags on them.
Board members, any additional questions or concerns that you're aware of? Obviously, this is a very important and sensitive subject that we want to make sure is being handled appropriately within our school district at those age levels. And we appreciate Marcy, your leadership, and all of our principals who try to make sure we do this appropriately throughout our district.
And are we doing some support for those teen mothers? You know, are they incorporated in the school system? Are they?
It really depends on the family situation. You know, they can if they want to, but it really is based on what their needs are and what they want to participate in.
So would they do homeschool, or would they do, you know, are they staying in school?
I don't have specifics on that. I mean, I know that we've had over the last couple of years a couple in special ed that I know more specifically how they've been interacted. We had one that did come back to school part-time, and we have one that did drop out. Kept the baby and was a daycare issue for her.
Certainly would like to have them all get their high school diploma.
That's
definitely obstacle to overcome and have a baby at the same time. So whatever support we can give to those people in that circumstance would be, I'm sure, valuable for them.
So Marcy, based on the information, the committee will not meet again until December of 2023 unless there's a circumstance in between for adjustment and change.
Yes.
So the motion that we need to make this evening, Superintendent?
Would it simply be to approve the makeup of the materials review committee.
Okay.
So approve the individuals on the committee.
Okay. Could we have such a motion from the board members?
I'll make that motion.
Greg has made the motion as indicated.
For a materials review committee.
Thank you. Have a second.
I would second that based on conversation we had earlier that we would add a middle school member and perhaps another parent. Would that be a friendly amendment to your motion?
I think that's good notation. I don't know what the numbers are that we need to get to.
And I'll communicate with Liz Dickinson as she comes in, as I'll be passing this torch to her.
Great. Okay. All in favor of this motion with that addendum? So indicate.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you, Marcy.
Yes, thank you.
We appreciate it greatly. Our next action item is for the Logan High School Land Trust plan. Superintendent, if you could lead that through us, I think we've all had a chance to look at the first preliminary details that came our way.
Thank you. So as Board Member Stewart said, you've all received a copy of the draft plan from the high school. You also have in board book a copy of the minutes from the meeting when the plan was voted on by the council members, so you can see the members who were participating there. There have been some delays in putting all of the information on the state website. They've been updating their website, and it's going much slower than they had intended. So some of the things, like the form that community council members click on to indicate that they've participated in the creation of the plan, some of those things haven't been available through the website, but you do have the minutes to show who participated in that. The action sheet that's in there tonight shows the timeline for approving all of our plans for the rest of the schools in the district. Those are all in process. This one has come to us early, so if we can get it approved earlier, then they can actually use the funds to pay for licensed teaching positions. One of the challenges that we've seen historically with school land trust has been the difficulty in using all of the funds that are allocated when we're unable to find personnel. And often that's been because of an inability to hire paraprofessionals. Some of our schools have large enough land trust allocations now that they do have the funds that they can pay for additional teaching staff. And since we are in the middle of the hiring window for licensed educators for next year, Logan High would like to get their plan approved a little bit earlier than usual so they can have confidence that those funds can then be allocated for licensed teaching positions. So that's the reason for bringing the high school's plan forward at an accelerated pace.
And we don't have any particular reason not to approve something early based on our state timelines. That's not a
hindrance
in any way.
No, they have the deadlines for when you must have it approved by, but if we are in a position to approve them early and the school and the community council have done the work to put a well thought together plan
so much
to us, we're ready.
Right. Could you also just explain to us again the overage for this particular from last
year? Yeah, so the carryover from the previous year. There were a number of things that principal, we asked Principal Guyman that question. Let me see if I can pull up his direct response.
I believe it was over the 10%.
It was. So as we look at that, sorry, let me find it. Yeah, so there are a few things that came up, and this was sent in response to an email to me. One was when they were working on the plan last year, it was forgotten that $30,000 of Learning Academy was being covered by GEAR Up funds, so it wasn't necessary to use them for school land trust. So that was $30,000 that hadn't been spent. There were a number of teachers who had to drop out of Learning Academy for personal reasons. They just had other things going on, so that freed up about $7,500. A district grant was secured to purchase the ninth grade Chromebooks for next year, so that was $50,000 that was not needed out of school land trust. And they had initially not allocated about $15,000, but that added to those others. And then there were a large number of the ESP positions, the aides and paraprofessionals, who they were not able to hire either at all or were only able to hire for a portion of the year. So the amount allocated for those salaries was not spent. So as we've worked with them, we've reiterated that, you know, the cost for the technology is something that the district will cover with these machines, with that grant that was acquired by our IT department. And then as they have these funds, it's seeing that, and we're having this conversation with all of our schools, paraprofessionals are simply not a reliable use of funds in our current hiring environment. We're facing the same challenges with hiring part-time hourly employees as are a number of industries across the country, and particularly here, including here in our valley. So we're encouraging schools to only allocate enough money to paraprofessionals that they're confident they'll be able to use, and they'll really be able to hire the individuals for that. But otherwise, if you have a large enough chunk of money, look at hiring additional teacher positions, interventionists who can provide that work, and we can have them full-time for the full length of the school year.
Thank you. Are we confident those will be approved to continue for that use?
By the state?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, we're confident that the plan that the high school has put together is one that will be approved by the state. There will be questions about the amount of carryover, but we have a number of schools, and you'll see this when we have the final reports ready. We have a number of schools with a large amount of carryover for similar reasons.
Right.
So as we visited with the state, we're saying, you know, this is something that we're all dealing with. It's not due to misuse of funds, it's simply the uses that have typically been planned for haven't been realized. And our principals, as they've approached me and we've talked about it, they've asked, well, should we put the effort into spending the money down? And we've said no, because generally when you get to a place where you're just trying to spend money down, you end up spending it on things that aren't the right purposes. And we said we would rather go to the state and say, here's the situation. We have a well thought out plan for using these funds that aligns well with the greatest needs of each of these schools. If we were to just try to spend it down, we could do that, but it'd be harder to make that alignment as tight as we think it needs to be.
Well, I think this will be a good example for us leading into the other schools as well. So board members, any questions or do you have any feedback? For me, the carryover item was one of the main issues to be discussed and make sure we know which way we're proceeding.
Well, I have several comments. Certainly the carryover is alarming to me. I saw that and went that because that's about 30%. Certainly we've discussed that in the past, that we really do want to spend that down. I understand the circumstances behind not spending it down, but it's a line you walk when your money is being targeted by the legislators.
Sure.
So we certainly want to make sure that that money isn't seen as, oh, they don't need that money, so we're going to pull that money out and use it to do some other special project that they have. So I don't know, I mean, we've had that problem in the past with, you know, typically sometimes more than others, but I would just hope that we can come up with a solid plan. I probably say this every single year, that we, you know, check that, double check that, and make sure that throughout the year that we're spending it versus getting to March, April, and oh, we have 30% of our budget left.
Right.
I mean, we really want to spend it because it's intended for the kids that are in the system at that moment. It's not intended to be used 3 or 4 or 5 years later. It's to help those kids. So we just want to make sure that we're cautious, and I understand we're dealing with circumstances with hiring, and that's thankfully an understandable excuse why it hasn't been spent. The question I have is, will this, typically we don't hire teachers with one-time money, and land trust money really is one-time money. So it's concerning, even though I love the idea that we're hiring actual educators with the money, we just have to realize that it's one-time money, and it could be gone next year.
Land trust is actually the most stable funding source we have. It's stable than the WPU.
I know it's stable, but you never know. I mean, it's like you have to commit to using that portion of land trust for that purpose, and you have a group of community council members who may decide, oh, we don't want to use it for that anymore. The priority is not this, and then that eliminates a teaching position. So it's not, I understand the funding's there, but
it's something that's out of our control.
Exactly.
It's right. That council.
Yeah, and that's something that we emphasize. I appreciate you bringing that up, Board Member Cooley. That's something we emphasize with all of the principals. Say, if you want to do this, yeah, the funding is reliable, but you do have to, it is determined by your community council. And if the council were to change their mind, then you would have to make adjustments someplace else, as we have educators who move into career status if we do that on these funding, these funds.
And we are dealing with the largest portion. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with over 9 versus all our other schools, so we may or may not have a little more flexibility there going into the future, but those are very good points.
And we certainly don't want to tie future community councils by saying, well, you have to do this because we've already hired this person. I mean, they can't have their hands tied because they really need to make sure that they're addressing the needs at the current moment. So as long as they understand that that can't be an expectation for anything beyond next school year, then it works out okay, but there has to be a big, huge asterisk by that when that person is hired.
So you anticipate we're going to have similar overages groups, middle schools and elementary schools?
The middle school will not have the same overages as we looked at their final report from 2 years. There will be some. I don't think it will be as high as the high schools. Elementaries, again, there will be some, but again, not as high of a percentage. Yeah, so we will see them, and I've communicated with all the principals saying, you know, we're looking, as I look at your final reports that are from a year ago now, we do see quite a bit of carryover. So as you're putting your plans together, these are the things to keep in mind. The two pieces of guidance we gave them was one, only plan to hire for paraprofessionals that your history now shows you're actually going to be able to fill, based on who you've been able to hire, not how much money you have available to hire. And then the second thing we've emphasized, it was the board is very aware of the demands that the pandemic has placed on teachers. So any action plans that are going to require significant extra time from teachers or professional development or new initiatives that go beyond the things that we've already prioritized are unlikely to be approved by the board. because the board is very aware of the demands that have already been placed on teachers. So as you work with your community councils, if you have a council that says, well, we really think we need to implement this new program, and this is what it's going to require from teachers in terms of time or training, be aware that the board is going to be looking at those very closely, because we don't want to start adding information that and time that places additional demands on staff.
Any other questions? Are we prepared to make a motion at this point to support this as indicated?
I'll make a motion that we approve the proposed 2022 school improvement and school land trust plan for Logan High School as presented. I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Christy, for that motion. Do we have a second?
Can we get an option?
Greg. Thank you, Greg. All in favor, say aye.
Out of the issue.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. And we're looking forward to this process now as we go through with the others. I think we're all a little more comfortable with that process and the time frame and making those reviews. So we look forward to scoring those on the rubric like we've set up. I think that's gone very well this past couple of years as we've looked at that. Thank you, Superintendent. Our next action item is policies for review. We have two related to procurement and one related to employee travel. Superintendent, if you could explain those to us, please.
Yeah, so policy CDD, procurement appeals and oversight, that as you see in the draft that you have in board book, all that includes some updates to legal citations. There's no change in the content. For policy CDA, procurement appeals and oversight, there are updates to legal citations. And then there's a section that's been deleted that used to describe the guidelines for intervention in a protest related to procurement procedures. The state law has changed, so that section is no longer relevant, so that's being removed from the policy. The section in policy CKB with employee travel reflects something that has been practiced in the past in a few situations, but we realized that we should probably update policy to reflect that. And the situation is when you have instances where an individual is driving to a conference and they choose to drive instead of fly. We've had teachers do this when they, for example, have gone to a conference in Las Vegas or Southern California and they want to stop and visit family or something along the way. And so they've chosen to drive and instead of fly to the destination. In that those situations, we would generally both reimburse for mileage, and there have been cases where we would pay for one overnight stay because it's during the course of travel to the destination. So what the proposed change in the language is reflected there in board book. If the drive time to or from the destination is more than 8 hours, an employee may stay one night at a hotel room en route and be reimbursed for the cost of the hotel up to the lodging per diem rates plus tax established by the U.S. General Service Administration for the city and state where the hotel is located. The district will reimburse the employee for the cost of parking but will not pay for rental car, shuttles, or cab fare. So let's say that I'm driving to California and I choose to spend the night in Las Vegas. That would be submitted to the district, and then we would calculate the amount of lodging rate, or the lodging rate that's part of the U.S. General Services Administration for Las Vegas, and the board member would be reimbursed, or the employee would be reimbursed for that dollar. So it's something we have done in the past. We decided that's something that should be codified in the policy just to bring clarity to that. Specifically, there were questions about, well, what amount do you reimburse for? How do you determine what the appropriate dollar amount is? As we looked at how we normally, select an amount for per diem or for hotel lodging reimbursement, we just went back to the documents from the U.S. government we normally use, and we figured that would be an appropriate way to make sure that the person was giving the right dollar amount. So those are the three policies. None of them require any other documents to be rescinded, but I'd be happy to open it up for any discussion or questions.
Questions, board members?
I do have a comment about, excuse me, the board travel or the employee travel CKB. I understand the addition of this to the policy. The situation, I just want to make sure that we're treating those people that choose to fly the same as those people who choose to drive. So for example, if you choose to fly to a conference in California and you spend 4 hours in the morning at your conference and you have to fly home, you're spending more than 8 hours on district time. But you're not allowed to spend an additional night and travel the next day. But if you drive, you get paid a hotel room. So I think that we need to be very careful on how we're treating those that fly versus those that drive. Because it certainly isn't our intent to provide a vacation for people who are traveling to a conference. I mean, if it's convenient and they stop, that's fine. But I think that we need to really look at that to equalize that situation, because it'll happen. I mean, you're gonna have, because there's no way you can fly, you can't go and attend a conference in the morning of a day, get to the airport, fly home, and drive to your home, and be home within 8 hours. So it's unfair to those people who are flying, and it's got to be equal. It's got to be equal either way. You can't treat one driving people different than the people who are flying. So I suggest that we take a look and figure out how we can equalize that in the policy before we just assume that we're going to allow those that are driving an extra night on district time. So I'm not sure how you would do that, if it would be circumstantial based on where they're going or if they are flying or if they're how far away they are. But I mean, driving 8 hours is from here to what? Just outside of Vegas, maybe?
Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, there you go. Buffalo Bills is probably 8 hours. That's exactly probably right. And you can't, I mean, if you fly to Vegas, you're at least, I mean, flying to Vegas is about the same distance as driving to Vegas. Once you get here, get to the airport, check your baggage, be there 2 hours early, get off the airplane, come back out. So I would, and I will make that motion that we pull that policy just so that we can equalize that situation between flying and driving. That's my comment.
I think that's a fair comment. I don't know what the terminology would be for equalization of that. Obviously, the approval happens through your office superintendent, so that would be something for discussion and approval that we would obviously rely on you.
Yeah, we can work on some language. Jeff and I can figure something out.
And I did pull up.
I think it is a good point.
Yeah, I did pull up other policies.
Wear and tear as well as cost.
And there's nothing in there that indicates anything about flying. It only has something about mileage on employee travel. So there's nothing even in there about flying. You know, there's something about per diem, but certainly we need to. I mean, if we're going to make an adjustment to policy, we need to make an adjustment so that it covers, all methods versus just drive.
I think that's a good point.
So I would like to make a motion. Oh, I'm sorry, Greg. I didn't mean to cut you off.
What's the order?
All right, so I will make a motion that we approve policy CDA, which is procurement, appeals, and oversight, and CDD, another procurement, appeals, and oversight, and then move CKB to wouldn't necessarily be a second, would it be a second reading?
Let's call it a second reading.
We'll move it to a second. We'll move it to a second reading, and that's my motion.
Okay. Good motion by Christy Cooley that we separate the three approving CDA and CDD, but separating CKB employee travel out to the second reading so we can review that for next time. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Anybody opposed? There are only three of us. Thank you. We appreciate that, Superintendent. We appreciate the enhancements to our policies to make sure we're clear. We have one from Logan High School that is also related to Gear Up for in-state travel. I don't believe we have anybody from the high high school per se, superintendent, would you be presenting that for us?
Certainly. So this is a summer trip for the National Gear Up Youth Leadership Summit. This will be held in July of 2022. They would like to take 8 students on the trip. 4 of them will be recent graduates enrolled in a college or university fall of 2022. Because the way the Gear Up grant is structured, our graduates continue to receive mentoring and support through Gear Up for the first year of college. No school days would be missed. The entire cost of the trip is paid through Gear Up. Principal Diamond and our Gear Up advisor, Lee Larson, will accompany the students as chaperones. So it meets our student to chaperone ratios, the costs are covered, there's no disruption to the school year, and they're going to, I've been to the conference, that is an outstanding youth leadership conference. They do a wonderful job. So the request is that the board approve the out-of-state travel request for 8 Gear Up students, accompanied by 2 chaperones, to attend the National Gear Up Youth Leadership Summit in Washington, D.C. on July 17th through 20th of 2022.
So the chaperones will just be attending, but they'll have adequate chaperoning and opportunities for supervision by the Gear Up people while they're attending the conference.
Yes.
And 100% of those fees will be provided by Gear Up.
100% will be paid by Gear Up. There's no cost to the students or the staff.
Are we to assume all 8 students are then Utah State then?
4 of them are.
4 of them.
4 of them are. The other 4 will still be like seniors at Logan.
Seniors.
So I've been reading a little bit about Gear Up. I understand that it's pretty hard to get accepted. How many students do we have in Gear Up? And do most of our students that want to be part of Gear Up, can they, their applications a problem at all? Nationwide, they say 1 out of 5 students get accepted to Gear Up.
That's interesting, because our Gear Up is done through Utah State University. Now, the receipt of an institutional Gear Up grant is hard, but once Utah State got it for the state as a whole, they then identified the schools across the state that they wanted to work with. We're the largest Gear Up grant recipient in Utah. Partially due to our partnership with Utah State. So that's why we've been able to provide the number of resources and support
for these kids.
It's great. As you've read, it really targets potential first-generation college students, identifying the support that they need. I attended Superintendent's Leadership Conference put on by INSEP, which is the group that administers Europe, and it was one of the best a year-long leadership training opportunities I've had. 3 different conference meetings during the year, assignments and webinars throughout the year, research opportunities. They really do an outstanding job of setting people up for success. And the student workshops are the same. So I'm excited for students to be able to participate.
And we're getting very good consistency now too, that this is the second, I believe, 5-year grants that are offered for Gear Up. So
now Gear Up is
continuity.
They did not apply for the upcoming grant, so we are going to be without Gear Up funding for a while. So they'll be deciding, do we at the university, do we reapply, try to get another grant for the state, or
is that because of the left leadership in the College of Education, or was it a change in
federal
funds?
There have been some changes in staffing, you know, employees up there. So I'm not sure if the decision was made to just wait a year and then reapply, as opposed to just completely walk away. We're having discussions with them to decide, identify really what the future is.
Well, I think it's been a highly successful process, as you mentioned, with Logan High School. Could we entertain a motion?
I'll make the motion to approve the
Greg Miller, please make that motion for
Washington, D.C.
July 17th?
July 17th.
Thank you, Greg. Second.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Christy Cooley. All in favor of the Logan High Gear Up? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. We appreciate that. Those are all 4 very good action items for us as a board.
I forgot to ask how they'll determine who's going to participate. Do you have
I don't have that information. I can follow up and let you all know.
Certainly there's more than, I mean, they've got to have some reason to identify how those students, but that's an amazing opportunity.
Yeah.
It's too bad you can't send more than eight, but
They limit the numbers you can bring from your program.
But it'd be interesting to know which students they choose to go to that. And I would assume that some of those students probably haven't, maybe never even been on a plane or out of state,
yeah,
or out, maybe out, not even out of Cache County. I don't know.
Well, we can make a note to have the four students who will return to Logan High the following year come and report to the board in the fall.
Oh, that'd be amazing. We'd love that. Thank you. Sorry, I should have asked that.
Right. You're welcome.
Thank you. We have two discussion items for discussion only, no action necessary, but Superintendent, could you move us through both of those?
Yes, thank you. So we do have Jill Beard who can, from the Mount Logan. We'll do this, we've got this one first, and then we'll have Jill talk about the fee schedule. Just to give you an update on where we are with enrollment and staffing, as of today, we have 5,478 students enrolled in the district. In Board Book, you have a number of documents. We're not going to go through all of those, but they're there for your reference. One of them does break down our current students by grade band, so you can see how many of those are preschool, how many are kindergarten, first through fifth grade, et cetera. We're projecting a 30-plus student increase in enrollment, K-5, for next year due to increases in kindergarten. We are seeing requests for that. As you all, I believe, already know, but we'll just reiterate it, our DLI numbers are currently at 46 students registered for first grade DLI in Portuguese, and we have 84 students who have registered for Spanish. Our capacity is 60 in each language. So invitations have been sent out to all of the families who applied for Portuguese have received, or are receiving letters notifying them of their acceptance to the program. They went through the process of identifying the families in Spanish, and those letters have been sent out. Now we're receiving word on families who are not able to participate because their situations have changed, and we'll be reaching out to families who did not receive the initial letter so they can participate. So they are going through that process right now with DLI. Though once the Spanish program is full and all parents who have been invited have confirmed that they're attending, then the families who are on the waiting list will be notified that they're on the waiting list, or they could choose to participate in Portuguese if they so desire. But that's how our enrollment right now is panning out. So we are looking at a bit of an uptick next year. In terms of staffing, you have a couple of breakdowns. Three of the documents that you have in Board Book actually show the formula charts that we use for allocating FTE. We've shared those with the board before. I don't feel that we necessarily need to spend time on those tonight, but I wanted you to, again, have a visual of the process that we follow when we're allocating staffing for every school, the various things we take into account. One thing I'm very excited about on the elementary FTE, which is the one that has the chart for each school, and then about the middle of each chart has the number of blocks in orange. We are adding, with our Title I funds, we are adding additional FTE for kindergarten and first grade at each of our elementary schools. Again, Title I funding has often been used for paraprofessionals. Again, since those have not been available, we're going to reallocate those funds and put it towards additional staffing. You'll note that will bring our average class sizes in kindergarten and first grade all below 20. I think our lowest is a school down to 14. That is intended to support teachers and students in helping our students to respond to the data that Director Grunig shared a couple meetings ago that showed the impact of the pandemic on student achievement and our lowest grades, and providing that additional support there so we can help kindergarten and first grade students develop those foundational academic skills that they need to promote their success as they start moving through the grade bands. So that is exciting that we've been able to to work and find ways to use those Title I funds to, we think, better address some of the needs of our students. So we do have a number with that FTE allocation that's increased the number of new hires that we're looking for with new teachers. So we currently have 11 traditional openings that we're hiring for. 7.5 of those are due to Title I funds. So as you see job postings come out or you hear how many we're hiring, much of that is because we're allocating additional money towards our elementary FTE. You do have some data in there in terms of retirements and resignations that also share the reasons for those from our employees, so you have that to reference. We are anticipating most of our DLI teachers returning. Those hirings are done in collaboration with the state, especially for our employees who are on international guest teacher licenses, but we plan on them remaining. And dual language immersion will have 10 FTE in each language, so you will have a full staffing complement both for Spanish and Portuguese moving forward. For Mount Logan and Logan High, you also see their FTE. The staffing for the secondaries is a little bit different because we allocate initially based on enrollment, but then we make adjustments based on the master schedule. As you put the master schedule together and see where students are, we then look at class sizes to identify where additional staffing might need to be allocated to keep our class sizes at a reasonable level. So currently, Mount Logan has 47.14 FTE positions allocated. The high school has 60.13. They are both hiring for new positions. We just hired a math teacher for Logan High today, coming from Illinois. So we're excited to have that. So those are just a quick summary with the information you have of where we currently are with our allocations, what we have with our departures, and what we have in terms of the new hires that we are working towards as well.
Again, we're trying to get a good jump on this to make sure we take advantage of every applicant.
They have been interviewing and putting offers on the table, open contracts. With the boundary shifts, we just finalized today teachers who have requested transfers. And just this morning, our principals were able to work with teachers to communicate if they had put in for a transfer request, whether that would be something that would be feasible. They were all feasible. We reviewed that. And everyone who put in for a transfer request were able to honor that request. So those notifications went out today. So now we've been able to act on the open contracts that we're trying to get people hired for, and now we are hiring for the specific positions that we know we have left, whether by grade level or by content at the middle school and high school.
Excellent. Comments from the board? Questions?
I went first last time, so Greg, any comments?
Mike? This is just part of the thing we get to do every year, replacing people. We'd love to get, especially in our elementary schools, get some of these teachers that would be there for 20 years and could start teaching the children's children a few times. But there's a lot of value in long-term teachers.
So one of the things that you have the data in there, as we visited with individuals who are departing, the majority are leaving at the elementary or leaving to raise families. One of the things that we're working on, as I've met with Principal Markworth and we've talked about his responsibilities for next year working with us here in the district office, a big part of his role will be to strengthen our efforts to grow our own employees. One of the wonderful things about being this close to the university is you get lots of people straight out of the university. One of the challenges with working with the university is they're straight out of the university, and then they often have a spouse who has opportunities elsewhere. So what we're looking at is strengthening our program for either partnering with Utah State or with other institutions to help individuals who are paraprofessionals, volunteers, formerly licensed teachers, et cetera, and putting some more structures in place that can support them in getting their teacher's license. So we have individuals who have roots in the community, have roots in our school district, and we can help them become licensed teachers who can then stay for multiple years. And as you mentioned, Board Member Miller, they can teach grandkids and make it a generational thing. So that is a goal we have. He's going to be working closely. We're going to be looking at how we tie into what Latinos in Action is currently doing with their tutoring opportunities in the elementary schools to find students who might be interested in education, working with our students at the high school who are peer tutors in our severe special ed classes to identify students who might want to pursue special education, and then providing through our CTE program the education preparation courses that can get students ready for coursework up at the university in pursuing an education degree. So we have some specific steps we're going to try to take, and Principal Mark Worth's, one of his biggest roles next year will be to help put those programs together and get them implemented.
Christy comments.
I'm a tiny bit concerned that we're losing four staff from Bridger and one from Wilson. And I hope it's not because of boundary adjustments. And I'm sure it could be. I mean, that's a significant loss to a school to lose four staff members in one school. Am I reading that correctly?
So are you looking at the elementary?
As it says, yeah. Down four. Oh, should that be positive? Oh no, that's down four.
So remind me where you're looking at. I'll look there with you.
Under Bridger, the far right column, it says 2022-23 total FTEs 19, and 2022-21 is 23.
Okay. Yeah, so part of that is due to the shift of DLI out of Bridger. So all of the DLI teachers who have been in Bridger are all going up to Hillcrest.
Okay.
All
right. Like
so,
that's
yeah, so
okay.
The Bridger number is a little bit different from every other schools because of the transition
okay.
of DLI out of the
I'm like, that's a significant loss.
Yeah,
to
I appreciate
teachers.
You noticing that, but that's part of the reason behind it.
Okay, so the only school besides Bridger that's losing staff members is Wilson. And they're losing one.
I believe that's correct.
So is that due to, could that be due to realignment or school choice?
It's due to a number of things. It's partially realignment, it could be school choice. It's the way the enrollment at each grade band shifts. So you may have, as students move from grade to grade, you have some new students come in, and you have new students leave. You recall Wilson didn't really lose any neighborhoods. They gained neighborhoods. So a loss in staffing wouldn't be due to a change in boundary, it would be a change to neighborhood enrollment.
Well, they lost the northern edge. Didn't they lose the northern edge of it that went to Adams?
No, because we extended the Wilson boundary up to 400, so they gained the neighborhood that was going to Adams.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. So could those, yeah, that's right. So could those students be school choicing into Adams?
I don't believe, as I review the school choice data numbers, I don't believe we had enough students from that neighborhood choosing to stay at Adams instead of go to Wilson that would have caused a loss in FTE. That a number like that is generally due to changes in neighborhood.
What about the 75 students identified that were coming to the Elvis when we were down there a week ago? From across the 6th West Broad.
Mm-hmm. Those are.
How does that impact the numbers there?
Yeah, so currently the Meadows has 11 students coming to Ellis. I visited with their office staff yesterday. They have 164 units, and they plan on having those all filled by the end of this month. Currently, they have 141 that are filled. So I'm in contact with their manager, or the facility manager, to see if we can partner with them to do some surveying of their tenants to identify the ages of their children. Right now, just through, based on the numbers of students from the Meadows who have enrolled at Ellis, and our my discussion with the staff at the Meadows, it looks like we're talking about families who have children who are not yet school age. So what we'd like to do is get an idea of what ages they are so we can start projecting out what that's going to be. It doesn't look like right now we're going to have a large number of students coming from the Meadows for next year. We'll probably be between the 11 and 20-ish.
Did they mention still some design to provide a preschool of any kind?
They didn't mention that yet. Their phase two is going to be a 55-plus community. Phase three will be a mix of townhomes and apartments. So they have not mentioned the preschool yet. As I said, I've reached out to the facility manager. If we're able to sit down and visit, I'll bring that up with them again and see if that's something that they
seemed like originally that was
still
something they had promised their tenants and wanted to be partnering with us on. We talked about the difficulties of doing so, but maybe that's good.
So I'll follow up with her.
It might be till they fill,
or they or they finish some of the other physical facility amenities.
Yeah.
I think as we had the discussion, I believe one of the ideas was in the, you know, the clubhouse, you know, by the pool, et cetera, that could be where they could house it, and they haven't constructed that yet. So I'll follow up with them and see if that's something they still want to consider.
Sorry, back to Wilson. So it looks like that one of the grades, I'm assuming this is all public information. One of the grades at Wilson is going to be going from, they'll have 32 class size. So have you considered that's where it's the loss of staff would be?
In the fourth grade.
Not necessarily the loss of staff, 32 in grade class.
Reduction in staff.
Yeah.
Reduction in loss.
So 32 in a fourth and fifth grade is just before, it's where we would start allocating class size reduction support through AIDS. It's not where by formula we start allocating staff yet. So at this point, because we're still at a point with student mobility where we tend to see a fair amount of fluctuation in our student enrollment, that's one, and you'll see that's why it's in yellow, that's a watch. So that's one we look at and we say, okay, this is a class size that it's right on the border of where we would add staff. Let's watch it and see if it moves one direction or the other, and if it does, then that's a place where we'll have to add some additional resources.
Because it looks like that would potentially be the highest class size in the district.
On this
that
chart,
specific grade.
And we're projecting, yeah.
Any other comments on the board?
Certainly, we'd like to have them. We'd like to have them all lower. Exactly, and that's been. But you know, it's great to be able to have them. The K, you know,
the smaller
and the younger.
Extra.
We continue to strive to find that balance between the most desirable class size and the resources to provide it.
Yeah, that's right. Because it certainly takes a lot of money to reduce class sizes even by one person or one student. So, I mean, I recognize that, and I'm grateful that you're aware and are watching that number, because certainly that could go up in the future if needed.
And then I assume, Superintendent, you'll give us an update regarding the Hillcrest EOI and the Adams mix as far as how that ends up working.
Oh, yes.
Here in registration.
Yeah. As we finalize, as we get closer,
yeah,
and we see where
that and all the busing stuff figured out so everybody can be happy and know that their child's going to be taken care of, which we want.
Yeah, the final busing stuff is we visited with Cash Transportation. We'll probably not be ready until the summer. before we're able to publicize that and get everything finalized. So what we've been trying to do is share the walking maps and showing here are the neighborhoods that are eligible for busing. If you live in this in these neighborhoods, we can guarantee that your child is eligible for busing. And then that leads to questions about courtesy stops. So we talk about the guidelines for that. It depends if there's room on the bus and if the stop is on a direct route from the last pickup point to the school, then that's what they'll look at. And we, of course, can't guarantee those until we have the finalized routes put together. But that's the criteria that's generally been used as we identify.
Excellent. Thank you for that update, Superintendent. We're excited now to hear from Mount Logan Middle School. Jill Beard, the assistant principal, is here with us. Talk about the vision of fees.
When the fees were brought before you previously for approval, there was one that was unintentionally left off that we needed to add in. So you'll see that the 7th and 8th grade fees for ELA, that $3 per year, is a fee that we would like to have approved. We have proposed that fee.
And is that the only one that was
Left off? Yep, that's it.
That's the only one.
Sat here a long time to tell us that.
I know.
It's been exciting, though.
It's been great.
Do we have a motion to add that one to
the decision? Just an add to, and that we need to rebroadcast this in a couple more times? Or how does that work? I wasn't sure when I read this.
So because this is an addition to the fee schedule, technically, we do need to just have it on our agenda so individuals can make comment if they like. We went back and forth on it. It mirrors the other fees. It's not something substantial, let's add it on and make sure that people have a chance to comment and move forward.
We will do so.
Thank
you, Jill.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It very much.
Just while we're on fees, what happened with the legislature on the bill that was kind of changed curriculum fees, I guess, was the major impact of it, what they were talking about. Did that ever see the light of day down there?
I received a summary from Lexi, and I just got to remember which one that was. Going down the list.
We can look for that delays.
I'll double check. I've got the list here, it's just going through it, so I'll find it before we leave. We'll double check on that.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any board member committee reports? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, we need a motion to do that.
No, just to stay compliant with policy, we're figuring this is one we should probably wait to vote on it for two more meetings just to see if there are any complaints. Just so we don't run the risk of anyone saying, well, we didn't know about that one. We really should have given some
time.
We'll put that on the agenda.
Good comment.
Yeah. Any update reports? I know we've all reported something in the last two meetings.
I apologize. That's why my phone was ringing, because I was looking something up for the food pantry. I just want to make sure that you're aware that they're doing the first ever smoke out barbecue in conjunction with the Heritage Center. They're going to split the profit between those two amazing organizations. They're excited. It's going to be chicken thighs and ribs. Meats provided by JBS, I believe. So if you're really good at cooking, smoking, whatever those are, you should join. And there's some prize money. And
if we're good at eating.
And you're good at eating,
they'll take my money.
They'll gladly take your money. Yeah. So that's going to be on July 23rd. It will be at the Heritage Center. More information will be coming, but certainly plan on. They've done this. It's kind of an out-of-the-box approach to fundraising, and I think it's a great partnership between the Heritage Center and the food pantry. unite those two and combine their efforts. Matt says that he's seen these competitions and they've got, I mean, I don't really know anything about cook-offs at this nature, but he said they've got the endorsement of a pretty big cookout competitor competition person that's endorsing
good.
Them. So they'll have some prize money and they'll have hopefully some teams that will come across the country to participate, and hopefully it'll be something that they could do in the future that will really boost up the funds for both organizations.
Yeah,
they'll have other events there that day as well for you to participate in. I think they've got some activities and some things going on that day, so plan on being there that day and taking your significant other out for dinner and having some ribs and some chicken thighs and enjoying the day. So that's what I have to report today.
Thank you. We always love to support the food pantry. That's just been such a great partnership with our schools.
They're doing a great job.
All the way through.
Before we start, I did find HB 211, which is the school fee amendments, did not pass.
It did not pass,
so we'll be continuing to move forward with the guidelines for booth fees that we currently have in place.
Until next year.
I was hoping it was going to spring between those fees.
Thank you. I believe that concludes most of our agenda items. We do have the calendar items on the last page we refer you to, and I think as a group we have
outside. I don't know if you're going to be able to play baseball.
Yeah, we've challenged ourselves as a board to try to represent our group as much as we can to see our students play. And again, baseball and softball will be jockeying for a position with weather for the next 3 or 4 weeks, I'm sure. So if we get a chance, Larry's usually our baseball representative, but anyone else that can make it to those events, we certainly want to support the cross.
Spring training or anything like that.
I want to go to St. George next week.
In St. George next week?
Oh, is that?
Excellent.
That's
great.
Logan's playing down there at a tournament.
What? I'm sorry. Tell me.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
Spew it out, because I don't even know. I'll be in St. George next week.
Yeah, so it starts on the 17th. So
and it's football?
Baseball. Playing at Pine View High School.
Oh, okay.
You're back down there playing, so those guys get to play.
Thank you.
Around.
Actually get to play.
We have some good young players, too, that I think are going to surprise some teams in our region, so we're excited about that.
How's the pitching?
Pitching.
That's what
we have three good pitchers. And we obviously want to support our lacrosse as well anytime we can. We have choir and guitar events. A reminder on March 16th in the evening that we have our regional schedule at the Elements. Please plan on attending that as well. Superintendent, anything else that we need to bring before this group?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you very much for your participation, and those of you that have been with us, Ginger, thank you for coming.
Slipped in.
Day. We appreciate that always. And with that, we'll stand adjourned.
There you go.
I think
thank
you should
you.
Run this meeting all the time.
Good job, Frank.
Adjourned at what time, Frank?
First for me.
What time? 4:24.
4:24. Perfect. Thank you.
You want to
again, a reminder about the caucuses, registration between 6 and 7, and they start at 7 o'clock.